Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We're, what is this, episode 87 tonight. In fact, we're going to be live recording this sucker while we're watching the Giants lose to the Pirates right now. It's been a couple of weeks since we recorded. Willie's not going to be here tonight. He's actually in the box, in the booth tonight, covering the game. But tonight, all the way back from the land down under, is Ben Friedlee. Ben, welcome back, man.
Yeah, and it's good to be back. I did get to watch a decent amount of Giants baseball out there, but it was weird because everything was a day game when you're in Australia. Like, either it's an early day game or it's a midday game. And so you're like, you're walking around trying to like listen to the game, and the sun is out and really bright. And they're like, real cold night here at the park. And I'm like, no, it's not. You know, the perspective is very strange when your time zone shifts by like 7 hours.
Yeah, you start getting used to that, right? Especially when you're seeing everything at night and you're watching it during the day, it kind of throws you off. I mean, yeah. Even just going back to
coming
Hawaii,
back and having games like at night again was there was a little bit of a transition period. I was like, wait, no, that's the regular time now. And now the games I was watching in Australia are at like 11 at night or 2 in the morning. Okay, got it.
Well, and how long were you down there, by the way?
Nearly a month.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends whose couches I could crash on, had been saving up vacation time at work for like 2 years, been saving up for the flight ticket for like a year and a half. I mean, like there was a lot of planning that went into it, but it paid off. It was a ton of fun, and it was very interesting. And I was trying to keep a running tally. I think all over Australia, I probably ran into about, not counting gear that was for sale, I ran into, I think, 7 or 8 Giants caps, and I think 2 Dodgers caps, maybe 3.
That's good to hear that balance.
So, yeah. Like, so besides the fact that the only baseball jersey I found for sale at one point was a Dodgers jersey, but besides that, Australia seems to have its priorities pretty straight. So I'll probably go back sometime. I appreciate that.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Felt very welcome spotting Giants caps around Sydney and random places in Adelaide. I found there was a guy in Adelaide. In Adelaide, South Australia, of all places, in a Curry jersey that just walked past me. And I was just like, wait, what? And I literally yelled something about either go Dubs, go Warriors, or go Curry as he walked past me and was just like, wait, you're where? Home team, I'm in Australia. What is happening? Right in the middle of the playoffs, of course, but it was a kick.
No, that's pretty cool. I've never been to Australia before, but it's strange when I was in Europe and seeing MLB and NFL kind of logo wear around the place. It's a worldwide sport, not as popular as soccer, of course. That is number one, but you know, football and baseball definitely have their reaches.
Baseball, baseball in Australia is a thing. That's why we got Travis Blackley.
Yeah, they have their own league, so
exactly. And that voice you heard is also one Eric Nathanson is joining us tonight, all the way down from Florida.
Hey.
How you doing, Eric?
I'm in America's Australia.
Now, so we had Ben.
You're in the down under part of America.
So we had Ben in Australia for almost a month, and now we've had Eric living in Disney World for almost a month.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you're pretty much done. No, you're still going to continue with that, right?
I'm going to keep going. I've got a year pass, so I'm going to keep going on and off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're not paying for tickets every day, you may as well just roll in there anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Make it worthwhile.
Now, what if you could do that with Giants games?
I can, and it costs a little less.
That's right.
I'm just going to leave it there.
Oh. Okay, you leave it there.
It's sad because it's true.
Yuck. It's sad because it's true. Oh, man.
If I lived in a city, I'd be with Willie right now. Let's just say that.
Hey, you know, Willie is he's ramping it up. And for those of you who have been tuning into the Twitter account, I'm sure you've seen Willie. He's been in the press box quite a bit lately. He's there tonight, and unbeknownst to us, he actually had one Justin Robert Young join him at BPN in the press box. In fact, Jury, which is his nickname, took over the TorchCast Twitter account tonight, so that's been kind of fun. So I think you can follow him at...
If you're wondering why the tweets tonight have been had a certain type of spice to them.
They have a certain spice to them.
We've got a special certain spice. Something about an innie boner in there at one point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Forget.
You can follow Justin at Justin R. Young. He's definitely got a little bit of a less mild lexicon, shall we say?
Yep.
But he's funny.
It's been interesting.
Yeah. He hosts co-hosts a show called Night Attack with Brian Brushwood, who actually also has a show on the is it National Geographic Channel, I think. So he's a magician himself and a comedian. So those two guys do just a fantastic job on their podcast. You should check it out at Night Attack. Again, it's not safe for work. It's very vulgar, but very fun. They got a video addition to it. So it's pretty cool that Willie got him in there today because Justin lives actually in Oakland. So I'm sure it was pretty easy to get him over here. Justin's really into a bunch of the video game stuff that Willie and I are into, including Hearthstone and WoW and other things like that. So that's kind of the connection there. But
right.
But check it out. So
we've got them both at the park tonight.
That's
yeah.
right. So we got a lot of Giants to talk about. We haven't recorded in 2 weeks. Eric and I were pretty excited about, you know, what were they, 20-18, I think,
when we recorded last? Yeah, they just pushed over 500, I think. Hunter just came back.
Yeah, I believe they were 20-18 because we had talked about the previous podcast or two podcasts prior to that. They were 4-10, which is their low watermark for the season. And we said, hey, look, let's not panic until we get to the quarter mark of the season, which is 40 games. And if they're close to 20-20 and Hunter is coming back, everything's going to be fine. And so that last podcast, they were 20-18 because they had that remarkable run. And everything was roses. Hunter had come back. They were almost undefeated with him. They were right where everything wanted to be. And sure enough, since then, they've even done better. In fact, in May, they went even despite the fact they lost the last two games, including yesterday's heart-crushing defeat, they still finished the month 21-9, which was the most wins in any month the Giants have had since 1968, which is pretty amazing. And if they had one more win, I believe it would have been as many wins as they've had since 1954. So remarkable month. They had actually snuck into first place, 3 days ago, 2 days ago, by a half game after their fifth win in a row.
Just touristing our way there for now.
What's that?
Just touristing our way there for now. Yeah.
Just, you know, they're just checking out first place to see how it feels. They might put it in offer later. You know, they're going to go back and think about it. They're going to go sleep on it, see how it works out. But as we sit right now, the Giants are a half game back of the Dodgers. And in fact, I think the Dodgers won tonight and the Giants are losing. So they might slip back to a game and a half. But they had a great month of May. They rocketed back up. Were at one point, 30-20 playing 600 ball. They've had a couple of hiccups here the last two or three games. But overall, I think most Giants fans got to be very, very pleased at where things are now, especially considering where they were and where they started. What do you guys feel as far as the last 2 weeks and how things have gone?
Even on a rough game like this, there have been some high points. You know, like Panic is 2-for-3 right now. Make that 2-for-4. He's, you know, there's always the spots that, like, you're not having the entire team just go completely belly flop all at once. But, yeah, You try really hard when you have a loss and then things get kind of rough to not be like, okay, two games in, I now need to freak out. Because, I mean, honestly, the team played like devastatingly outstanding in May after a terrible April. And honestly, if there's anything that should kind of inspire us to some confidence, it's the fact that early in the year, we started with the slump, we hit a real early, real bad slump, and then we recovered in spectacular fashion, which is, you know, that's exactly what you want to have seen. And last year, it was April and May were outstanding, and then just massive slump by the time we hit June. So it's sort of like, well, we've hit our slump for the year, came back out of it, can probably stand parts of another one if we keep firing on cylinders like this. But we've gotten to already see what this team looks like when it's really firing, and it's a lot of fun when they're all going.
Yeah, they look like the best team in baseball when they're rolling on all cylinders. It's the type of lineup that you just like, wow, Angel Pagan is hitting seventh in this lineup when the guy started the season at third. I mean, May was fantastic. It turned everything around, and it basically gave us all hope for this season instead of saying, oh, great, odd year and all that crap. That's my favorite thing about May, is it pushed the two words odd year the hell out of the conversation for now.
For now.
Because people are not focusing on that. Yeah, for now. For now. People are not.
For now. I mean, we're fickle, you know. We know we're fickle.
We're Giants fans. But I don't know if we – I don't know what real team we're seeing yet. I'm really not sure if they're, you know, this team or if they're that team. So I think we kind of got to see if they can get through June to show us if they've got anything. I mean, I understand going on runs, but, you know, if they go on a run at the wrong time in the bad way, the Dodgers are not a bad team. So it's going to hurt them. I mean, it's nice that it's pulled them up from, being down at the bottom. I mean, they went from last place to first place through the month?
Yeah. No, they were in last place. And by the way, we're watching the Giants-Pirates game, and the best thing just happened.
That's a great jersey.
Did you see that?
Yep.
Yeah. So,
I'm sure everyone knows about it now, but really, I suppose he just hit a fly ball down the right field line as Polanco went for the ball, and he definitely had room to make the catch. Ironically, a Pirates fan wearing a Bonds jersey got in the way of Polanco, and he could not catch the ball.
Everything was awkward about that.
Everything was perfect about that, except perhaps the result, because they are going to a replay, so I don't know what they're going to – I mean, they can't call him. Can they call him out?
They can if he touched it. I think if they feel that he impeded it, that they can call him out. But I don't think the fan touched it. I think he completely – did he?
Polanco
touched it.
It went off his glove and then hit the –
No, I mean the fan. If the fan had touched it, I would say yes, that it would be overturned and they'd give him the out. But since the fan missed it, I'm going off sort of knowledge of this situation. Hey, Alex Matthews on the screen. The guy doing the MLB.TV is a friend of mine, the guy who does the replay stuff.
Oh, nice.
Oh, this is fantastic. I just love this. Oh, yeah, definitely went off Polanco's glove, hit the guy in the face.
It went off Polanco's glove.
So I think they're just going to call it a foul ball.
Wow. Well, that is just great. I love it. So, yeah, the Giants have pulled within a run
now. But it is, yeah.
It's 4-3. Of course, the Giants had bases loaded with nobody out 2 innings ago and unfortunately could not score.
I was going to say, if that's a foul, essentially, Aoki would have had to tag up, right?
Well, Aoki scored.
Right. But, you know, of course, like, he couldn't score normally on a foul, but if you're tagged up.
Well, yeah, but he already
scored before that.
That
one always throws me because it's so rare that you see it. Yeah. Oh, that's right. He scored on the ground out.
Yeah, he's scoring on the ground. There's no one on base right now.
I thought I had seen them looking him back to third because I'm, like, half watching the game and half looking at our notes. So that's my fault.
Pirates fan is being ejected.
And this, folks, is the kind of a –
He is now waving
goodbye. The kind of expert analysis that you can
– Get out of here,
Well, you know, it's funny because we're watching a home game right now, trying to figure out if this team that we've seen over the last month is for real. And the thing that sticks out at me is all the runs they score on the road and all the missed opportunities they have at home.
Well, missed opportunities, but what's certainly saving them is the fact that their pitching has been unbelievable. Okay. And I don't even have it in the notes here, but of course, the Giants in the month of May hit a robust .291, by the way. I mean, that's insane. Yeah. And of course, what they had 4 shutouts in a row, and we're up to a 1.39 consecutive scoreless innings at home. They had 7 shutouts in the month. I mean, it's
– No, I think they had 8 or 9. They had 4 shutouts in a row twice.
Did they have it twice in May?
Yes. It started out with the Angels series.
They called them
out. Rolled into the Dodgers series, and the Angels – oh, they did?
They called Buster Posey out on that. I did not think that would happen.
Okay, when he grabs his arm like that, that indicates that it is fan interference. Ah. I get that he's saying he impeded him, but I think since he didn't touch it, I mean, then again, who the F knows?
It's like you just go with the case could be made, quote unquote, and that's all you got.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And Polanco running off the field like he made the greatest play ever. Yeah. you're right. They scored almost 5 runs a game last month, 4.9.
No, they were absolutely fantastic.
That's insane.
The pitching staff at a 3.52.
We haven't even talked about probably the cherry on top for the month was the shutout sweep of the Dodgers. I mean, it's one thing to sweep the Dodgers, but the fact that you hold them to zero runs, you shut them out for an entire series, I mean, that's just like, shut up, go away, don't bother us. I mean, it's just something extra sweet about that. And what are they, 7-2 against the Dodgers this year, I believe? And
yes.
That's, think about it. I mean, if they were playing 500 or if they were slightly below 500, the Giants would be 5 or 6 games behind first place right now. So those wins are absolutely crucial to their performance and where they are in the standings right now. So hopefully they can kind of continue that pace.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, the other thing about like saying, you know, there were one team in April and there were one team in May. April, they only had 22 games. May, yes. They had 30 full games. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There was an extra week of baseball for them to, I don't want to say build these stats, but at least, you know, kind of give them a chance to show. Because the season started late, like the 5th or the 6th this year.
It
so.
Did. Yeah. That's really late.
I was comparing, you know what I mean? I was comparing the 2 months, and I'm like, that's a big difference in games.
Play. Yeah, it didn't start on the 30th of March this time. Yeah. I mean, this is starting to, at least so far, look like a season where one or two wins might end up making the difference. Of course, that's so far. You know, there's plenty of time left for that to change dramatically. But
yeah, plenty.
You know,
of time.
For sure. But every win always counts. But everyone feels like it counts so much more right now because of how close we're sort of trailing/leading/trailing/mostly trailing, but hopefully not for long, the Dodgers. So it's a little nerve-wracking. It's definitely a nerve-wracking time, but you know, it's an optimistic nerve-wracking time to be a Giants fan, and that's not how all of our odd years have gone. So it's not a bad place to be in when you think about it.
No,
they're a good team. They really are.
In 2011, despite the fact that Buster Posey went down in May, they still finished with above 500 record, and we're in it all the way up until the last couple of weeks of the season. So, I mean, hopefully it won't mirror 2011 in the fact that they're going to fade at the end, but hopefully they are going to be in it the entire season as opposed to 2013, when I think by July we all just kind of threw up the white flag and said, well, odd year, we're done.
Yeah.
You know?
It's too late, we're over.
Yeah, and you know, even with the expanded playoffs, we all know that the standings and a playoff seeding can come down to just one game, you know, either a tie or you finish one game behind someone or what have you. And yesterday's game was one of those games where you just kind of look back and go, you know, look, I don't think there's going to be a single team in all of Major League Baseball that's not going to blow at least one of those types of games throughout the year. You play 162, you're going to have a couple of heartbreakers. It's just inevitable. It's going to happen. And the Giants haven't had that yet this year. In fact, they were 25-0 when leading after 8 innings this season. And so, they blew it yesterday. It was their third blown save. But the other two previous blown saves, they actually won those games. So it didn't cost them a game in the standings. But yesterday, you know, they did have that 5-3 lead going into the ninth. And, unfortunately, you know, bad things happened. But, you know, I think Twitter was a little unfair, which usually is.
Which it pretty much always is.
Which it pretty much
about the only thing it knows how to do.
You just look at Twitter.
Yesterday
and go,
was the day of hot takes.
Yeah. What kind of horrible things can I read about Santiago Casilla? Oh, there you go. And there it is. And
all of them.
There it is.
All of them.
Yep. Oh, there's another one and another one and another one. So pretty vitriolic stuff. But at the same time, you know, look, the Giants can't go through 162 games without blowing a game like that. It's going to happen.
It's why I'm generally glad I mostly just follow other people that either write about baseball or who follow the people that write about baseball, because most of them at least are going to look at that and go, well, I'm mad about that, but oh well, as opposed to looking and go, well, I'm mad about that and I really hope things happen to your family. I'm like, you're not a good person, tweeter. Right? You're not a good person.
I even shared one of those guys yesterday. He was screaming, he tweeted horrible things at Craw and his wife, and I'm like, come on, get a grip, people.
Yeah,
I mean, these guys have so many chips in the bank with us already that something like that, it's going to happen, you know? And if Crawford had turned around and hit the home run to win it, then we all would have been like, oh, great job, Crawford. Totally washes away what happened, you know?
You bring up a great point there, because Crawford, which I want to talk about later as far as all-star game potential, I mean, he's been just – this is his best year by far so far for the Giants. And he's going to make errors throughout the year. Every shortstop does. He just happened to make an error at probably the most crucial time in the game, you know? A lot of people won't look back.
The most inopportune time that you could possibly make an error.
Yeah, if he made an error in the fifth inning, let's say, that would have been a double play to end the fifth inning. And the Braves end up scoring 3 or 4 runs that inning. most people aren't going to put the blame on Crawford. It kind of gets buried a little bit because it's in the middle of the game. The fact that this was the ninth inning and that would have ended the game, and then it's just magnified like that. And, you know, Crawford stepped up, and in the post-game interviews, he said, I was trying to throw the ball before I had it. I rushed it. And, you know, he took ownage of it. No one's mad at him. It happens. But you're right. Some of the people come out on Twitter and expect these guys to be robots. Well, I mean, if the guy blows three games in a row with errors, that's a different story. But, you know, a few games here and there, it's going to happen. And you just got to let these guys slide for a game or two. And
well, the other thing is as much as he says, I was trying to throw it before I caught it, it's still a physical error. It's not a mental error. It's not like he ran at the wrong time to try to steal a base. It's not like he covered the wrong base or missed a cutoff man or something like that. Yeah. It's like you said, it's a physical error.
Or got
it's
picked off like one of the other people on the team.
Getting picked off. Or
whose name
Blanco
is Brandon as well.
From second.
Whose name is also Brandon.
Might have been Hicks.
might have been the yet unsigned Brandon Inge, but it's any minute now, I'm sure.
It's one of those Brandons.
Oh my God, we could have an infield of Brandons that way. Oh, forget it.
Oh, we had the potential for it the other year. I was just like, somebody just signed Brandon Inge just for the sake of that. Just all Brandons.
That's right.
Brandon.
That would have been the one game that kept the Giants out of the playoffs last year, and we would have been crying about not having
Brandon at third, Brandon at short, Brandon at second, Brandon at first. And can we get a Brandon to catch? I don't know about that. That might be hard.
Nope.
That might be difficult.
I can't think of – I don't know there are any right now, but
– Well, I'm Buster's now dreaming of somebody named Brandon at the bat hitting into a triple play, Brandon to Brandon to Brandon. Yeah.
Buster's just a nickname, so he can adopt Brandon as his new nickname because he's still Gerald Dempster, right? Or Dempsey, whatever it is. Dempster.
Gerald Dempsey.
He's Ryan Dempster
Brandon
now.
Buster Posey.
Yeah.
Right. He got Buster because Dad got Demp.
Yep.
So what's really cool, though, is that the Giants have been doing so well, and even though power rankings don't mean squat, it is something to take note when ESPN actually kind of eschews its East Coast bias and actually put Giants at number 2 in this morning's released power rankings. So that was kind of a surprise. Usually, you had to play like we did
in order to do it. That's the only thing. It's like the Giants played really, really well, like out of their minds in May. And that's when ESPN finally goes, all right, you can be number 2.
Yeah, but all right, you can be number 2.
If that's what you have to do it, at least we get it.
Well, and you know, before they lost...
Like, not like the Giants are number 9.
Yeah, and before they lost that game against the Braves 8-0, they had won 13 out of 15. I mean, that's just stupid ball.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Which means they still won 13 out of 17.
Right. And it's still video game baseball they're playing overall for the last few weeks.
13 out of 16, this game's not over yet. We just all feel very, you know,
No, 17, because they had two-game losing streaks.
Yeah. Yeah, Rockies.
They lost 2 in Colorado, and then for some reason they can't play on Saturdays and Sundays because they lost to the Rockies in game 2 that Saturday night, and then they lost that Sunday. And then same thing this past week, and they lost Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or against Colorado as a whole.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked when I went to ESPN.com this morning. And with the way they have it all laid out now, the new page, which I'm not a fan of, but they've got that little box on the left side, you know, with like your favorite teams. And I saw under the Giants, it said Giants up to number 2 in power rankings. I'm like, that can't be right.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Right.
I was absolutely shocked to see something like that. Yeah.
Surprise.
And I think they might have leapfrogged St. Louis had they won those 2 games. I think they would have been number 1.
Did they get drunk or something? What's going on over there in Connecticut or where the hell?
All right. Who did they go out and give the controls to?
Who belts getting hamstrung on these calls?
You guys realize, though, I mean, if this score stands up, which I hope it doesn't, but that's not the point. If this score stands up, this will be the most games that we've lost in a row since April 17th, which was our 8-game losing streak.
Oof. That's pretty damn good.
That's not bad.
Yep, but we had 2 games. We lost 2 games May 6th and 7th, Padres and Marlins. We lost 2 games, 13th and 14th, Houston and Cincinnati, and then 2 games against the Rockies, 2 games against the Braves. So we haven't lost more than 2 games since April 16th. Yeah.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that too is a lot of these, amazingly, and I mentioned it earlier, that they seem to have a home road split going on where they're actually playing better ball on the road. I mean, that first losing streak, a lot of it was what? The beginning homestand, they got swept by the Rockies and things like that. And the other thing is about why I wonder about May that we were, you know, talking about, I'm probably regressing here a little bit because we're talking about number 2 in the power rankings. You know, you have to wonder if they were in, let's think about this, and I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, they played in Houston, then they played in Cincinnati, then they played in Colorado, then they played in Milwaukee. These are all hitter parks. These are all hitter parks. And they're going to Philly, and they're going to Philly this weekend. So they got this opportunity, and I think actually that's what impresses me is that they took advantage of the opportunity and absolutely like laid the wood during May.
Yeah, and you were talking about that actually, Eric, last podcast. You were very excited about the Dodgers coming into town. You thought they were going to do well because they would rise to the challenge, and then you were very excited about going on the road to those good teams, and then to Milwaukee, and then eventually later, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, they just went on fire during the entire stretch.
They
went 8 in
Milwaukee,
a row, lost 2, and then won another 5 in a row.
That sweep in Milwaukee, there was never a doubt. There was never a doubt, and I don't think any Giants fans mind that they were going to sweep that series. It was kind of like watching games, going ho hum. Okay, they're going to win this. I know that.
I felt very good about those games too. Never was stressed out. You're right.
Right.
I just kind of expected it.
It's nothing like this. The games we get stressed out, the games that are torture, seem to be at home.
Well,
and here's another
close.
One.
They're always close at home. Yeah. Almost every single one. You know, it's insane.
Yeah.
And so
the exception of the one where we blew up on Atlanta, they've all been within 4 runs just about.
Well, Crawford.
And four is pushing a lot, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if there's even been that many. Crawford, he made a great comment after that 8-0 game. He said, you know, the mark of a good team is – he's like, you're going to lose one-run games. You're going to get blown out during the year. The mark of a good team is not getting blown out as much as losing the one-run games.
Right.
And I think he was implying that, you know, they're always in it and they always feel like they're in it.
Yeah.
That was the first time they got
blown out.
Yeah, that's the first time they got blown out in a long time.
No, it was.
Well,
that's just
one
of those, you know, you just chalk it up.
The Giants haven't,
right.
That blowout win. Yeah, and that was a surprise for sure. I mean, Lincecum had been pitching really well up until that point. And things just kind of fell apart for the Giants, and they just never really were able to recover, per se. That's one game, though. And, you know, the next game they come back, and it's one error that ends up costing them. And other than that, they play a pretty damn solid 5-3 game. That's exactly what you got to do.
Now, I figure, I mean, ESPN, they got them all the way up to number 2 in the power rankings. I think the wonder is if they keep winning but other teams start winning, will they keep them up there? Because you even wrote it in here, what East Coast bias, because we know it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Being physical.
Yeah, but we like to pretend.
Well, just on the opposite,
can we
I mean, like, here they're, you know, what, one out away from losing 3 in a row. If they have a bad week, of course, they're going to slip from 2 to 7 or 8. You know that's going to happen.
Can we just take a second, though, to talk about our alien overlord and savior, Hunter Pence?
There it is.
That was the turnaround point, it felt like. Like, things were not going great, but they went okay. They were going okay, and then Pence comes back, and all of a sudden it's like, offensive explosion! And it's been spectacular. I missed watching that guy. I like Justin Maxwell. I actually liked Justin Maxwell even when he was back with the Astros. I just remember being like, this kid will, you know, he hustles, he works hard. But man, Pence is just fun to watch for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah,
he's fun to, all of the good reasons. He's just hilarious.
When you're at the game, he's fun to just watch. Right field, you know what I mean? You could sit there and watch him for a whole inning, and he'll move and tweak, and the whole team seems to feed off of him. It was like, I'm sure I tweeted at that time, Buster Posey is the heart of this team, but Hunter Pence is the soul. And it felt like the team got their soul back when he came back. And it seemed like they knew he was coming back too, and they started playing good like 2-3 games right before he came back as well.
Yeah, it's like they were kind of like he's coming back soon. We're getting hyped up because he's going to be on the field soon. I mean, Pence was there with them at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was with the team. He didn't go rehab for that long. He came back pretty quickly and was with the team for a couple of days and like texted Boch. Or no, actually, no, he was with Sacramento. Actually, I'm sorry. He was with Sacramento, and then he texted Boch. He's just like, I am a weapon. I am an offensive weapon waiting to be, something along those lines. It's just like, all right, that sounds like not only the kind of thing Pence would say, but the kind of thing this team needs. So do it. Let's bring him back. Let's go. and that worked out. I mean, when Pence came back, just that spark plug really just went off.
Yeah. No, I mean, now they do have a 3-game losing streak with Pence, but I think part of that is also Pence has kind of cooled off significantly. Posey's been kind of cold.
Yeah, but that was the start of the day before he came back was the start of that 8-game winning streak. And I mean, it's hard not to like look at that and go, well, this may not be the point where it turned around, but damned if it doesn't make it look like it.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah. I think they won the night before he came back that Friday in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And then he came back on Saturday and they won 7 in a row with him in the lineup. So,
right. Definitely dropped 2 to the Rockies and then won 5 in a row after that.
Yeah.
I mean,
definitely looked pretty damn good with him.
Hunter Pence, here he am, destroyer of worlds. It's, you know, it's pretty great.
Well, Chad, you had the stat, right, with how he is with, how the Giants are with and without. Where'd it go? There we are.
Yeah, so, well, they just dropped tonight's game, unfortunately. So they are now 12-5 with Pence and 18-18 without him. But think about that. They were 12-2 before this 3-game losing streak. So it just shows you the kind of the spark plug he has been. And he's though he's been the line last 3 games, he's been cold. Yeah, so.
Yeah, he has.
You know, that's kind of part of the equation. But, hey, you know, we all have our ups and downs. Speaking about ups and downs, I mean, Brandon Crawford, even though he did boot the ball yesterday, which did cost him the game, he's just been having a spectacular year. He did go 0-for-4 today, but
offensively, he's been outstanding.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many times have we talked about this guy saying if he hits 230, 240, but plays wizard-like defense, we're happy.
Right.
And here he is coming into tonight's game hitting 299 with 7 jacks and leading the team with 34 ribbies. His 34. Defensive war is, his total war overall is, I don't have the number right here, but it's 9th best out of position players in MLB and 5th in the NL. That's just incredible. And I know that a lot of the Giants are going to perhaps maybe not do so well in the All-Star game balloting, but of course we do have our manager is going to be the manager of the National League. So I'm sure he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be considered or at least subbed in for a injury replacement, you know, at the end. God forbid, if he's not voted in. But man, this guy, as of right now, absolutely deserves to be in the All-Star game. There's not many other shortstops that are performing better than him offensively and defensively as a combination. And it's been just such a great surprise. If this guy can hold a 270 average for the year and you know, he's on pace for, you know, 15, 16 jacks, which I'm not saying he's going to get to, but he hit 10 last year,
right?
Yeah,
but right? This is what we do every year. We say, you know, if he can just, well, you know, it's almost like there's no reason to think that he won't just kind of like, I'm just going to spite those torture cast guys and keep just trying to just do a little better all the time.
He could just hit 300. Right. Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is,
just hit over 300.
He seems so smart. Like, he has, over the last few years, Crawford seems to have taken to improving a certain part of his game each offseason. Last year, it was him coming out of the gates hitting the left-handed pitching, which he's doing again like crazy this season.
Agreed.
Yeah, and it almost makes it look like maybe he worked on contact in this offseason, because it seems like And this is what you want to see out of a young ball player that comes up through your system and gets thrown out there when he's kind of young. He's improving every single year, little by little, in certain aspects of the game. You know, so that 5-10 years from now, he's going to be the guy passing on the stuff to whoever's coming in next. I think it's really impressive. It's a testament.
I should point out that Brandon Crawford is actually leading the team in Baseball Reference WAR. Just like 2.7,
a
half a win higher than Buster Posey, mm-hmm. who is the next highest on the list. Like, he has been outstanding both offensively and defensively for this team. And, you know, that's one of those things, like, you look at and you say, is he finally hitting well enough to get a gold glove this year? Because, I mean, he's still playing well enough for in the field, but he's almost hitting 300 right now. And this is a whole different Crawford, and it dovetails neatly with the rest of the team, though. When Crawford is on towards the bottom of the lineup or at the middle of the lineup, you know, you just start stringing things together. But in the past, Crawford has had some spots where he's not necessarily, and Crawford's kind of been constantly on for the last 3 weeks. And you can see that it really, like, keeping the bottom of the order moving really keeps the team running.
Well, it's funny because Bochy's jumped him up to the 6th slot again. I get worried when Crawford gets bumped up in the order. I mean, it worked out on Sunday with the back-to-back jacks, but I get worried when Crawford gets moved up in the order that he puts too much pressure on himself and thinks that he needs to come in and be the, you know, the big man and drive in all the runs.
Natural RBI guy.
Right. Yeah.
On the other hand, though, when the team's working, he's got people behind him that can do it. And that's the case at the moment, at least, is the people behind him in the lineup can pick him up. And that hasn't always been the case in our off years. So, but I get what you mean. Every time we move Crawford up in the order anywhere other than second, it's like, because for some reason, he just does not seem to thrive in that spot of the order, or has not historically. Of course, he also hasn't historically hit 299. So I kind of can't say anything.
It just isn't. Yeah, it's historic in its own right. So.
All right, well, it's funny. You bring up Crawford as an all-star possibility. What about Joe Panik?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think he definitely merits
the competition,
consideration.
I think it's different at the second.
Yeah, but I think the competition's a little bit stiffer.
Yeah.
So, at second base?
At second base. I don't know by how much.
I see Bochy bringing him along. I don't see him getting voted in. That's kind of my thought on this. Do you still have that list of the Giants' WAR in front of you?
Yeah,
I don't. But maybe Ben does.
I can pull it up in a second. But the thing about the players have some say in some of those as well, though. So I mean, it's not necessarily just. But Bochy gets a couple of reserve picks, injury picks, and so on. And I think Crawford is, like he said publicly before, that Crawford is playing well enough for it this year. So I think it's not out of the question. But it just depends on the situation. Panic is currently at a 1.5. He's good for 1.5 runs or 1.5 wins above replacement. Ahead of him currently are Belt, Posey, and Crawford, 2.2, and 2.7.
That's another name right there, Brandon Belt. I know he struggled for a little bit and was out, but that guy's been on a tear. He's almost all-star worthy at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly like he's at a tougher position because first base tends to be where you slot the guys that have the outstanding numbers, except that Belt can play defense, whereas some of them can't, but that won't always get you all-star attention. I mean, Belt, on the other hand, has 7 home runs, 22 RBI. You know, he's gotten walked 18 times, and that's only 2 behind Panic and 3 behind Posey. So, I mean, his eye has been really good this year.
Right.
3 behind Aoki as well. I should point that out.
He's
struck out more than anybody else on the team, sure. But, you know, Crawford is only about 9 strikeouts behind him, and we've been touting Crawford. You know, Belt's batting .306. And his OPS is .927. I mean, his OPS leads the team, even with the strikeouts and everything else. Yeah, I mean, if this is the breakout year for Belt, which maybe it'd be nice, but I still don't know if I feel like this is what Belt's capable of. But it's very rewarding watching him hit over 300. I'm not gonna lie.
No, especially after a slow start. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, 7 bombs in the last 17 games. He had another 2 RBI tonight. You know, he struck out in a crucial situation, but again, it's going to happen. So overall, he's been pretty good. I'm not sure about all-star worthy quite yet. I think he has to put, you know, together a little bit more of a streak, because of his long absence to begin with, because his RBI.
Yeah, I think he has to,
that's fair. Low.
He has to catch attention, I think is what it is. And, you know, going off is often how you get your name in. If you're like, go on one of those tears like Harper, where you're just, or like Chris Bryant, where you're just hitting a ton of home runs after the other, after the other, after the other, or where you're like, you know, you start developing a hitting streak or something, your name starts getting in the conversation. And the problem is that Belt's been consistent to the point of not having any like major hot streaks and just being a 300 hitter. And it's weird to say that, like, oh, he's not doing anything special. He's just hitting 300. Like, no, that's kind of what it is in a way, because he hasn't made any major splashes to the point where people are like, Brandon Belt, big in the national conversation right now. he's hitting .306.
Yeah.
Or, well, he was entering, he entered tonight at .306.
Yeah, and he had it tonight, so it didn't go down by too much if he was 1-for-3, 1-for-4, I should say.
As opposed to Norioki entered tonight .309, only person hitting better than Belt. That's.
Yeah,
this is a lot of guys hit 300 on this team.
Yeah, they got 4. They had 4 guys going into the game tonight.
Yeah.
Going in tonight. 4 tonight, and plus Brandon Crawford at 299, which we can pretend to round up. I mean,
well, it's going to go down with an over.
That is a lot in one lineup. True.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
In fairness, the Braves entered and came to AT&T Park with a lineup looking roughly like that, and their first 2 games, they just did not look like they could figure out what to do. So.
Nope. I think it was
all depends.
Giants sometimes look like that too.
Yep.
I think it was last night I was tweeting from the account, and I've been a little surprised from the moves lately, and I tweeted out all the Giants belong to us. Because apparently no one wants the Giants that we DFA for various reasons, but it's been pretty cool to see all of these guys getting DFA'd for various reasons, not because they're bad baseball players. Mm-hmm. It's just circumstances.
We haven't had
a chance to talk about McGee, but clearly he's been struggling, and the Giants just needed to make the room for the roster moves. And he was DFA'd, and you know, it was really cool. He did pull Duffy aside in the clubhouse to kick the shit out of him. But no, he just pulled him aside and said, "Hey man, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad for playing well. Don't feel bad for taking this opportunity." He had a similar thing that happened to him in Milwaukee when he was a young guy coming up, and he took someone's spot, you know, at third base. It's just kind of the nature of baseball. And it doesn't mean that McGee is out of the game, but he was DFA'd. But because of his salary is, what, four or five million this year? 4.5, I think. Most people thought that he would probably clear waivers. But it actually ended up being a little bit more complex than that because he did have technically one option left on his contract. So he was technically optioned to Sacramento, but he's not on the 40-man roster. So it's a little confusing there, but he accepted the assignment. We had Travis Ishikawa coming off of his rehab stint in the minor leagues. He was DFA'd as well, which was, again, another tough pill for, I think, Giants management to swallow, considering all the, you know, the image that Ishikawa has now as a cult hero in Giants lore. But again, he cleared waivers, and now he's been assigned to Sacramento. Yep.
And I think that being assigned to Sacramento means that he will, I believe that means he'll get the remainder of his $1.1 million,
I want to say,
as opposed to if he had opted for free agency. Correct. So that's nice too. It's a nice perk for him going back, playing with Sacramento, having every chance of being called back up to the big team if something happens.
Yep.
Preferably not. I'd really like Belt to actually stay healthy this whole year.
Well, right. You don't want to see it happen.
Healthy enough.
Yeah.
But should something happen, Travis Ishikawa is right there and is probably, at the moment, Ishikawa has to be easily the first choice for, like, on the depth chart for first base. Mm-hmm. It's basically Buster Posey's off day followed by Travis Ishikawa.
Absolutely. So, and then Eric Cordier, which we talked about last podcast, was DFA'd as well. And he's a flamethrower with some control issues, but he's definitely got potential, and he cleared waivers. And now he's also back mm-hmm. with Sacramento. And then on top of that, Kevin Franson was released, I guess, last week, and the Giants signed him to a minor league contract. So now he's at AAA Sacramento. Mm-hmm. So
we and you know, a lot of with
former Giants, I mean, of course, like former mm-hmm. major leaguers that we've seen on the 25-man roster now playing in Sacramento, including Juan Perez and all these other guys.
A lot of familiar names.
Yeah, a lot. You look at that AAA really roster. Good. I was looking at it tonight, and half of them, you're like, holy crap, all these guys have been on the Giants like for extended periods of time at one point in their career.
You could make a just below 500 team out of our AAA roster almost at this point.
No, it's pretty good.
That's what I was gonna say. They're like a 4A
maybe not
ball
the rotation,
club.
But and what's nice is that gives us a ton of depth, which is something that we haven't always had at a major league ready level. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. And I mean, you know, none of them are really upgrades. That's why they're there, essentially, you know, sad to say. But at any point, if you said, you know, now that he's starting to heat up, we can go ahead and slot McGee back in as a, you know, emergency over here and there, like corner infielder or something like that. Somebody gets hurt and you call up Casey McGee, you go, we're not going to lose nearly as much as we would have if somebody got hurt. We had to call up like Mac Williamson out of AA. Well, I guess I don't know that Mac Williamson is pretty good, but you know, it's nice just knowing that there is some there is a break glass in case of something happening in the organization now, and that's not always what it's felt like in previous years. In previous years, sometimes you look down and you go, something happens to this position, and I'm just going to cry for a week.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's not really the case.
To look at their roster right now, I'm just going to kind of go through here and just the names that kind of pop out to me, you know. We got Blackburn, Cordier, Juan Gutierrez, Jake Peavy, of course, on rehab assignment, Guillermo Quiroz, Hector Sanchez, John Bowker. There you go. Blast from the past.
Wow.
Here's
your corner outfield depth.
Yeah. Kevin Franson, Brandon Hicks, Travis Ishikawa, Casey McGee, Darren Ford, Juan Perez. I mean, think about that. I mean, yeah, you could put together pretty much an entire nine-man roster right there, a nine-man lineup. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So they got some time. So, or either
it's
other
fun.
Teams just
and
don't
I mean,
want the Giants.
It's,
don't want the Giants.
And a lot of these guys didn't necessarily – they weren't necessarily like, you know, useless to other teams. But at this stage in the year, you don't necessarily just grab somebody on a waiver because you're still gauging where you're at. And you try to get somebody on a waiver at the wrong time, you have to make a trade for him. You're not always prepared to do that.
You have to have
especially with some of these guys, some of the pieces here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's nice to have, you know, and guys like Kevin Franzen back. It doesn't hurt. I mean, you have something happen to, you know, there is always use for a utility infielder, and the only one we have now is Joaquin Arias, really. So
really? Well, somebody's going to need to come up. They were but they're not getting rid of him. Somebody's going to have to come up possibly Thursday because apparently the Giants coaches, Bags tweeted it earlier. Apparently the Giants coaches are discussing getting rid of an arm in the bullpen for the upcoming road trip.
Yes, that is correct, because one of the reasons they had to make room with Travis Ishikawa was the fact that they called up Hunter Strickland for 13 pitchers because they had the doubleheader in Colorado. They had a couple of blow-up games. They've had just a lot of pressure and work on their bullpen, and so they knew they needed 13 pitchers up until, like you said, they have a break and then the next road trip or homestand in which they have a few off days kind of intermixed within, which they feel like they might be able to dial back to 12-man as far as the pitching goes. So
well,
it'll be interesting to see what
happens. I'll go ahead and I'll throw a couple of names out at you here, and I want to just get your take on how you feel about if I list off this set of names. Adam Duvall, Jarrett Parker, Juan Perez, Hector Sanchez, Daniel Carbonell. Those are the remaining position players that we have on the 40-man right now.
Okay.
Huh. Now, we have some holes on the 40-man because of DFAing McGee. Yeah. Assuming that goes through, since McGee is currently on the 40-man, that does open up a spot to call up any number of, you know, McGee, Ishikawa, Franzen, Jarrett, you know, what have you. But that's what we've already – that's the we have some playroom on the 40-man right now. It's an interesting list. I don't know that any of those names jumps out at me right now as, yep, that's the one. That's the only thing.
Yeah,
Juan Perez is not the bench answer.
No, I think McGee's coming back on Thursday.
You think Thursday, huh?
Yeah, I really do. I think that he's going to be the guy they call up. I think Machi's going to go, and I think McGee's going to stay.
Yeah, I could see Machi going.
I definitely could see that. I could see that for sure. Machi really has been the, It does not take much to be a weak link in this bullpen. I think that's something that we don't necessarily talk about enough. The fact that we have a bullpen we can call the core for because of the continuity and the consistency that they pitch with. But yeah, Machi really Machi was really solid for us last year.
Yeah, but it was early too. Even then, he didn't last through the whole year. He turned into towards the end of the season.
Yeah, that's I would say so. So I mean, Machi out seems like the obvious choice. I agree. Strickland actually has done pretty damn well since coming back up, and I think that that's going to be good for him too to stick around and get a chance to remind the fans that he's actually got some ability.
Well, he does. The guy. It's funny. Absolutely. I just typed it in for later, but I'll use it now. Strickland, 7 1/3 innings this year, no runs, 8 strikeouts, no walks, and only one hit. Yeah. He's inherited 2 runners, and neither of them have scored.
Yeah. Well, and I heard Kruko talking about him about a week ago, and you know, a lot of people have been saying he's pretty nasty, and according to Kruko, and I don't know if this is true or not, when he came up last year, here's this young stud he's a little cocky, a little hot-headed. He's been blown away most batters in most of his life. So he comes up to the big leagues, and you know, the first go around he was doing pretty well. But then near the end of the year, he started getting torched. And, of course, they kept him on the postseason roster, and he got torched again almost every time. And the fact of the matter is he thought his four-seamer was good enough. You know, hit my 97-mile-an-hour four-seamer. And most batters are like, well, thank you very much. I'll take that out of the yard. I guess over the season he was working on a cutter, a two-seamer. And it's not perfected, but it's apparently it's worked wonders for him. So he's been working on that in the beginning of the season down there in AAA, and now he's been using that up in the pros. I have not seen it personally. I haven't seen him enough to gauge anything going, oh, yeah, this two-seamer cutting in on right-handers, blah, blah, blah. It's definitely
– yeah.
I don't know. That's just what Kruko's saying right now, so I buy it. I do trust Kruko as an analyst because he was a pitcher, and you know, even though he's a homer, I do think that he tries to speak the truth when it comes to these kinds of things. And so if that is the case –
he's a very even-handed homer. There's only so many of those out there.
Yeah, there's only so many of those. But if he does have his cutter working and it is at least throwing some guys off some of the time, so they're not going to just be taking him out of the park, he does have the core raw stuff to kind of inherit that closer role, which we've all been talking about. In fact, I want to transition into, and we'll come back to one of the things you want to talk about, Eric, but I just want to talk about it, not that I feel this way, but because it was pretty active on Twitter and on KMBR's show yesterday with Marty Lurie. A lot of people were calling in, playing armchair quarterback or armchair manager, as we like to call this segment, and they were saying, what the hell, man? Strickland had a perfect eighth. Why didn't Bochy just stick with the hot hand? Why doesn't he just stick with the hot hand? Why does he have to put in the closer? Why is it so formulaic? And yeah, so you're going, and that's yeah. To be honest, that's my reaction. Which, as well.
As you do, like reactionary Twitter posts always inspire me to go. Right.
And so I know you too.
I have a different take on it all. But
don't feel necessarily that you should have stuck with Strickland.
No. Would you like me to? To go with it? Just yeah. So we have something to debate about.
Yeah. Can you say? you know, I think he should have put in Brandon Belt as a left-handed reliever.
Okay, so
you know.
Right, exactly. So the answer is we need to try and trade for Ike Davis, who's excellent on the mound, as it turns out. There is something to be said for the sticking with the hot hand, of course, and for the sake of having somebody say it, because none of us agree with this, apparently, is, you know, Strickland was pitching well, and Strickland, unlike, say, most of the rest of the bullpen, is relatively fresh. We've, you know, Contos has gotten so much work over the last several weeks, and the core four have all rotated out pretty steadily, because a lot of our, you know, we've finally had pitchers start going into sixes and sevenths and eighths. But it's still not every time, especially you've got guys like, you know, Timmy, both Timmys will sort of oscillate whether they're on or off. And so you'll end up with a lot of, you know, longer stretches. We've used these guys a lot. Strickland probably got used some when he was in AAA, but on the other hand, he hasn't been used in as many major league games. We've been using him more consistently lately, but there is something to be said for having the guy who's fresh and pitching well, putting him on a short leash, sticking somebody in the bullpen and saying, start the ninth and see what you got. There's something to be said for that. I don't know that I totally agree with it enough to say this is what I would have done in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I see where they're coming from. Okay, have at it. You guys may now tear it apart.
Well, the funny thing is if it plays out any other way, nobody's being the armchair manager at this point.
No,
you know what I mean?
I agree.
And I read it today, and I believe it was Bags once again who might have been Hank, but I think it was Bags who pointed out that Romo was sick yesterday.
Yep.
And he was not available. And so in essence, that could be an argument. Oh, my God. I'm making the case. That's an argument for why Strickland actually could have stayed in the game. Oh, my God. I just made the case. Oh, but
you found it.
I did. But
No one on Twitter quoted it, though, so it's cool.
The funny thing is Bochy was comfortable enough, though, going into the ninth with Casilla and Lopez, that he didn't think that he was going to need the spillover, because you mentioned it earlier, Chad. They were 25-0 when leading after eight innings. Yeah. It wasn't like this was some tie game. It wasn't like this was they were down one and then suddenly they were down five. You know, they had the lead and he put his closer in. That, you know, forget – correct strategy or whatnot, Bochy feels like he's the best man to close out the game, so he put him in at that point.
Yeah, I mean,
you go to your ninth and you put in who you think is your best pitcher, and right now he thinks that that's Santiago Casilla.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he talked about it. The inning would have gone differently if Romo was healthy, because then Casilla would not have been stuck facing, what was it, Peterson? Is that guy's name?
Peterson, yeah.
Jace Peterson. Because you can go right, left, right.
Exactly, and he couldn't do that because he had Lopez, and he was trying to hold on to Lopez for emergency only if he needed him, and we all saw he ended up having to bring him in. But he couldn't go Casilla, Lopez, Romo like he thought about doing if this scenario unfolded, and which is why Santiago was out there to give up, you know, the double after the Crawford flub.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, I shouldn't say a tough call. I mean, I would have gone with Casilla as well, but I think Romo being sick made it a tough call, because there's two elements to this. Is Strickland, of course. No, I would never have continued with him in the ninth. The guy is still essentially a rookie. He had seven innings in the majors so far. Everyone's like, oh, look at him. He's one hit in seven innings. Yeah, okay, that's fine. But what if you put him in and he gets torched for three runs and everybody's going, why the hell did you put in the rookie over Casilla? Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
But this guy got a save in the 18th inning of a game back against Washington last year.
Yeah, I mean, Casilla has proven that he's a, you know, a great closer for the Giants. He's not, you know, Mariano Rivera, but he's a very, very good closer right now.
Casilla gets blown up all the time, or he used to.
Yeah, the guy's got the fourth-best ERA in the National League in the last 5 years, but he sucks.
Casilla blew another one. I'm like, what are you talking? You guys are imagining some...
You mean
some,
another one? He hasn't blown one up in like a year and a half.
Yeah, that's not some figment.
You know, Twitter. I love you to death, Twitter. But when the Santiago Casilla vitriol starts, I just kind of let it go past.
Well, and they start talking about trading for a closer. That was a big topic on Marty's show yesterday, and I was laughing hysterically. I'm like, how is this even a topic? They're like, yeah, we should definitely give up a couple of prospects for Aroldis Chapman because you know Cincinnati's going to have a fire sale. And I'm going, wait, what? The closer's not our
now. Look, if
closer's not our concern.
If Cincinnati
right now,
is seriously just going to, if Cincinnati is just going to start handing people out.
We'll take Cueto, thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Assuming he's healthy, of course.
Right.
But,
I would take Votto.
Yep.
Votto, yeah.
Just because you can. But only if they're giving away for cheap.
Yeah. Closer's not an issue right now.
He's not the Joey Votto he used to be.
It just pisses me. Well, he walked with three balls yesterday. He's so good. He walked on three balls.
Yeah, that was hilarious. How does nobody catch that?
Joey Votto.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Outstanding.
But, the bullpen is a whole.
A little Jedi mind.
Yeah. All right, I'll go. Yeah, the bullpen as a whole has been nails, and Casilla has pretty much been nails himself. Yeah. You know, it's. I was going to ask you guys. You guys are out there. I don't tune into Marty as often. Sometimes I'll pop the KNBR app open after a game. Sometimes I don't. But do Giants fans react on the radio to every game like it's a football game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, put it this way. The call screeners selectively pick the ones who feel that way, I should say.
Fair enough.
You
that
rarely
is,
get
accurate.
The...
I think people probably push it a little extra for that, too.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Maury Povich show, you know what I mean? It's like not only people are calling with crazy ideas, but the screeners are always choosing the more provocative kind of far left, far right kind of opinions. You never, very rarely, 1 out of 10 callers, you have a very civil, objective kind of conversation between a caller and Marty Lurie where they're like, oh, yes, oh, good point, oh, yes, and da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's very much, we should definitely get rid of Casilla. We need a trade for Chapman, and who is this guy? And it's just, it's that kind of stuff, which it's very frustrating as a listener because I really like Marty Lurie. I do. I think he brings kind of a level-headedness to everything, and he kind of calms everyone down. But at the same time, I'm getting sick of the idiots that they put on over the air because some of these people are so myopic.
Right.
In their view of what's going on in the world of Giants baseball, just ticks me off. Because he had blown, you know, 3 out of 5
but
games.
Remember, that's how you make sure that Marty
different.
Looks good, is you have Marty tell these people that they're wrong.
Yes. And that's a good point, is that, you know, you bring up the dredges of Giants fandom on the radio. It's very easy for an intellectual super being, comparatively, that Marty is to these guys. And yeah, he just shuts them down in a very nice way. But you're right. It's easy work for him. He you know, generally does not have to go toe-to-toe with these guys. He's very much, fair enough. Doesn't talk down to them. He just kind of talks to them as almost like they're children. Well, that's a very good point. I understand what you're saying, but let's look at it another way, you know, and he'll kind of pander to them in that fashion. But, and you're right. Because
yeah,
with Romo,
I see what you're talking about. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't. With Romo being sick, you know, a lot of people were crying.
You don't
about,
really think that we should trade the entire farm for Ricky Weeks.
A lot of people were crying about Bochy not bringing in Lopez against Peterson.
Peterson, like, yeah.
But again, they had another right-hander on the bench, and that was bases loaded with one out. Mm-hmm. And so most certainly, if he had made the call to Lopez, they would have called for the righty. Now, here's the thing. It's like Casilla pitches to lefties almost as well as righties. Lopez pitches excellently to lefties and gets hammered by righties. So why would Bochy make that move? And this is the kind of thing I don't think fans kind of think about too much, is that, oh, bring in the lefty against the lefty. Well, no, it wouldn't have been that matchup. He would have just burned Lopez for no one. The righty would have come in.
But it's easy to look at it and say, well, you know, in hindsight, then this person should have faced that person. It's like, yeah, but in hindsight, when you bring in that person, then everything else changes. It's really hard not to look back at it and say, well, and at this one point in the game, if you had changed this one thing, and forget that there's a butterfly effect that happens throughout these games. You know, it's not just a terrible movie featuring Ashton Kutcher. It's also really what would happen if you make one change to a game. The game does not play out the same way. And people forget that really easily. You know, if only McCovey had God, you know, it's,
the line drive. The, yes, I know.
That's
I
at
know.
The
thank you, Charlie.
At the end of the game, and
well,
I know.
Yeah, no one would be talking about
need higher.
You know, the only problem I had with Casilla yesterday, you know, he gave up the home run, the leadoff home run, which is fine because he's challenging him, right? He's got a two-run lane. He's going to challenge him.
Low,
he doesn't want to put him
on
base. It
was low in the zone, too, and it's Freddie Freeman. You got to tip your hat sometimes.
Yeah, and he's been murdering, you know, Casilla lately because he hit another one the other night off of him.
Yeah, it was Friday night or something, yeah.
But the problem I had was the pitch after that or the batter after that. He walks the guy.
Yes.
And that was I think, I don't even care about the triple. I really don't. I mean, the guy hit it, whatever. It's a physical mistake. It's the mental mistake, mostly, I would say.
No, it's a mental mistake.
Yeah, the next guy comes up and you walk him. You put the tying run on base with one out, and then that set up the play where it's a ground ball to Crawford, and he was thinking a little too fast and whatever. So that's really more the problem I had with him. Of course, like you said, if Crawford makes that play, which he does 99.5% of the time, the game's over, and no one's even talking about Casilla. No one's even talking about him. They're like, oh, yeah, he gave up a home run, but they won. Whatever, it's all good. You got the save. You know? So it's...
Yep. Only matters if you don't win.
Yeah, so
the reason
that walk really took me off.
Yeah, that to me, the reason I say that's a mental error is because it was Andrelton Simmons. This guy is not going to beat you with a long ball to tie the game. He's just not going to do it. So throw the ball over the effing plate and let him hit himself out.
Yeah, I mean, he's fast. Okay.
Right?
He can, you know, decent on the base paths. You don't really want him to get on base if you can, but what's the worst case scenario? Like, you're giving him a free base. Is guaranteeing you now have to deal with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, seven and a half out of 10 times, he's going to get himself out anyway. So might as well roll with it. That's why it was totally mental on Casilla. I mean, somebody, you know, you think about how many times somebody rolls over a ball, pops one out, just misses it, game of inches, blah, blah, blah. He should have just attacked him instead of trying to nibble around. I think Casilla was a little shaken, but I don't think that's the reason they lost.
No, I don't think so.
No, but it's, you know, they're all of these are contributing factors, and that's how it always is.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you do look back at any one thing, you're looking at stuff towards the end of the game that would have made the game play out about the same way, and that's one right there. It changes the nature of the next at bat when suddenly now the tying run is on base.
Right.
So Eric, you wanted to possibly change the lineup.
Yeah, I've been noticing, and I don't have any raw numbers to back this up. It's just something I've been noticing from watching the games. You mentioned it earlier. Pence has been struggling, and he's been in the third spot, and he's been struggling ever since he's been in the third spot. Mm-hmm. When he came back to the lineup, Bochy batted him sixth, and then he bumped him up to fifth, and then he threw him into the three slot and moved Pagan down to the seven hole. And I'm not so sure that the third spot is the best place for Pence. You know, I've made the case on this show before that I think your best hitter should hit third, so I really do think Buster should be there. But I don't see Pence as a natural three hitter. I don't see him making enough contact at times to do the things they need to do. He's just not – doesn't seem as comfortable in the three spot. And Pence is a guy that's going to say, oh, I can hit anywhere. Oh, I'm going to do this. You know, it's no problem. I can do anything, coach. Yeah. You know, like you said, I'm a weapon right now. Put me in. But it's almost like since he's been batting third, you know, he's got protection behind him now, and he's not taking advantage of it at all. I don't know if it's a mental thing with him. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, batting third and Hunter Pence are not agreeing with each other right now. So I propose he should be hitting fifth or sixth, depending on how you move the lineup around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think on paper, I really don't have a problem with Pence hitting third. I mean, he definitely has been cold since he moved up to that spot. I kind of want to see how this plays out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think just with his raw power and speed, I think third is kind of suited perfectly for him. I do agree that third is kind of where you want your best hitter, and I do agree that Buster could be there, but because of his lack of speed, I don't mind him being the four hitter. But yeah, if it's a comfort thing.
You look at them right now, though. Like, you look at them right now, and it feels like it really, like, assuming that you leave Aoki at leadoff, which for the most part I'm still okay with. I mean, he's had one of the best eyes for the ball, discipline-wise, on the team. But, you know, you go Aoki and Panic, obviously, and then after that, I kind of lean Posey, Belt, Pence, to be honest.
Yes, that's where I lean.
Yeah, because Belt's got the best raw power on the team, and he's got enough discipline to nudge guys over if he, you know, draws a walk. I mean, he's not just going to come up there and swing for the fences, but that is a lot of his game, and when it works, he can move guys over in a hurry, and he's been doing that. It's just that he's been doing it a bit lower in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really liked having Pence at third personally. I definitely get what you mean as far as feeling like he profiles well there. He's too much of a free swinger for me to put third. And when he does run into one, he can run into one pretty hard. But he's not a third or a fourth guy for me. He's a fifth guy for me.
Plus, you mix up the righty lefty. If you mix it up like you proposed,
Having Panic and Belton there in where they are, it's a little bonus having to change the angle. But it, just the way that Pence plays, he belongs in the top half of the lineup, but he belongs at fifth for me. That's how I've seen him. When he's really on, fourth, but when Belt's on, fifth.
Yeah.
I agree with that. The problem is Crawford's nudging them right now from the bottom. But
He is. That's a good problem to have, man.
Yes, it is. I don't know. There's just something about comfort. I brought up the same thing with Brandon Crawford, where I don't feel like he's as comfortable hitting out of when he's not hitting in the eighth or the seventh slot. And I think there's something mentally I mentioned earlier that he might press. I think Hunter might be trying to press as much, too. I think he's trying too hard to get things going at times. So like Chad, you said, you know, you'd like to see this play out. And I would too, because I'd like to see it turn positive, because he does, you know, slot in well there. But I just think comfort factor, and we know comfort factor is a big thing with Pence. Look at his freaking pants. So he's going to,
because it's true.
Exactly.
Also,
so he's going to lean towards what he's most comfortable doing. So I'm with you, Chad. Ben, I like that lineup.
Yeah. Mm. No, that was good. That was good. All right, so we're getting here to the end of our podcast. But coming up here, we have another two games against the Pirates at home, and then we're going to be on the road to Philadelphia. Well, hopefully they can feast on the Phillies. But, of course, the Phillies have been playing actually much better lately, so they're not bottom feeders at this point right now.
Guess who's pitching Friday for the Phillies?
Oh, this should be good. Who?
Jerome Williams.
Oh, really? Holy moly.
Oh, wow.
Tim Lincecum against Jerome Williams on Friday.
Oh my god! Okay, I like that matchup. I like it.
Former new generation versus older new generation. No, wait, that's not. I'm so confused. I don't know how to label this.
Yeah, I had to bring it up. You guys think he still has that necklace?
I don't know. I haven't physically seen him pitch in years, so that's a good question.
Right. I had to go check his baseball reference page to make sure it was Angels. Him.
Yeah. No, I knew he was back, but holy crap, that's amazing. No, I did not know that. All right, Jerome Williams on Friday. That's
I had to throw that out there. Any long time.
I'm just looking forward to hearing Kruk and Kipe chatter about that. That should be good.
Oh my god, that's going to be fun. And then Ben, I saw you just added here. You're going on vacation again? Where the hell are you? What exotic locale are you going to next time?
That is correct. The wild wilderness of New York. I'm going back for the Giants series out there, but for part of it. So,
and you did that last year as well.
If we've
right?
still got any listeners in New York, not last year, the year before.
2 years ago. So, that's right.
Yeah. So
and you went
if to we've got any,
and everything, right?
Yep. Did that. Planning on doing it again. I'm either gonna watch the. I don't know if I'm gonna try and race across the river to go and see. The Philadelphia game on Sunday or not, but I get in early morning on Sunday the 7th, and I'm there until the 10th or 11th, depending. I'm not sure which. And then I'm going to head down to D.C., probably not get a Nats game because I think they're out of town,
right?
If I remember right. But that's where my nephew is, so D.C. gets a visit no matter what anyway.
That's fantastic. Are you going to get a press pass to the White House to see them get their, you know? Presidential
solid
decree.
That's not happening.
Oh yeah, probably not.
Yeah, no, that'd be a very difficult one, I think, to get in touch with.
That's not just getting a press pass. Yeah,
hey you guys,
that's getting a full rectal exam.
That's finding out if you can pass the Secret Service background check.
Literally I'm showing up in a cat suit so they can tell I don't have anything on me. So yeah, if we have any listeners out on the East Coast still, which I think / hope, yeah, if anybody who listens who's in the New York area, but let's meet up at Finnerty's and have a chat, and we'll get you on the show with a little audio clip. Yeah, I'm definitely down.
Oh man,
but
jealous.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Catch a couple of the games in person and just hang out in New York and eat pizza and drink beer.
That sounds pretty damn good.
Yeah, not going for a month this time, mind you. I'm going for like 4 days in New York and like two in DC or
something. You're just missing the Nats. The Nats are out of town that Monday and Tuesday, and then they're back home that
just
Wednesday.
Missing them, huh?
Yeah, he is.
Hey, I want to see that park too.
Yeah, That's my sister says it's nice. She lives out there too.
Nats Park is nice. It's a little more industrial, which fits the area that it's in well. It's a lot more concrete. It looks sort of like and it's not a cross between a baseball and football stadium per se, but it's like if people who normally made football stadiums said, "Let's make a ballpark," and kind of got some like and got some things for like got good advice, it would look roughly like Nats Park.
Huh.
I don't mind it. I like it well enough. I like Nats Park well enough. A lot better than I like RFK for damn sure.
Sure.
Yeah, but well,
that's not saying much.
Sort of a hole. But it's, you know, compared to a lot of the other parks that I've seen, I'm still having only been like twice. I'm still trying to figure out what it is that makes Nats Park kind of special.
Mm-hmm.
And I for Nats Park, I haven't found it yet.
Okay.
I've only been twice.
Hey, that's the way I feel.
So,
about,
you know, I never want to rag on a ballpark.
I feel all that way about Levi's Stadium, to be honest. So.
It's going to be a lot of years before you guys find something special in Levi's.
I walked into Levi's Stadium this year and, you know, for a game and was like, so it's architecturally new and wide open and green and clean and nice. And yeah, I like it.
Sterile.
Very sterile. Very sterile. Not only that.
Yeah. I feel that way about a lot of football stadiums, though, but that may just be because I haven't been to enough of them yet.
No, and I haven't been to a ton of them either, but right. it just did not feel like home. It was really odd. And then you have that monstrosity of a tower of luxury boxes that's like, you know, 8 stories tall, and it's like the ivory tower.
Mount Levi's?
Yeah, it's literally like the ivory tower. You're just looking up there going, yep, those are all the rich people. Okay. You know, and they're just looking down on you, and it's blocking the sun.
Then you look up at the club section and go, those are the other rich people.
The other rich people, and we're still rich people for paying $200 for these tickets, right?
Look around you at the nosebleed section, and you're like, these are the sort of rich people because they're here.
Right.
Exactly.
So when AT&T opened up, did you guys feel like that was a sterile ballpark, or was it just such a jewel? Okay, there you go. There you go.
I wouldn't even go with such a jewel, per se. It's just it has personality in the outfield, and I feel that way about a lot of ballparks. Nats Park just is. There's probably a couple of distinctive features that I've just missed, because when I've been there, I've mostly been there with my older brother, and so I haven't gone for like a massive like walk all over like I do with almost every other park that I go to.
Sure.
But I just haven't like caught the thing that makes me go, oh, that's what makes Nats Park Nats Park, as opposed to, oh, that's what makes Nats Park a park that is much bigger than a minor league stadium.
I said,
I don't dislike it. I liked the food selection when I was there. I remember that. I liked the food selection, and there are some really great spots you can get pictures. Like, you know, if you want baseball field selfies, Nats Park has some really good ones if you find the right spot. And the way that they show the lineup is the way they used to show the lineup was they had a baseball card type photos of each player that are very large, blown up, and on the side of the team store as you come in, just sort of laid out 1 through 9.
So
there are some cool features they have, but they're smaller sort of subsidiary or auxiliary features. They're not like, it's not like a Coke bottle or the Bay or like Mount Davis, even, which I, you know, well, even if I don't,
not positive,
or the Ivy or the
Apple.
Right.
The Apple II, or, you know, there's always something that you look out at a park and you say, this is what makes this park that park.
Yeah.
Detroit skyline and the Hall of Fame numbers along the brick wall. I mean, there's all kinds of things that will do it for different parks. And I haven't figured out what Nats Parks is yet.
I have to ask, and it's totally off topic, and we'll get past this in 1 minute, but what was the distinct thing for you at White Sox Park?
At the cell? You know, what's funny is because I sat higher up, for me, it was something about the scoreboard placement and the plaza behind center field, because center field varies at any given different place.
Right.
It's nothing as distinctive, for sure. Because when you're on the third deck and you're out behind the seats, like where you can get food and stuff, it's kind of like Nats Park. There's not much to it. The food selection is way better than, say, Yankee Stadium. Every stadium's food selection is better than Yankee Stadium. But there's something about the way that the scoreboard plaza feels and looks that really was what really did it for me. I spent a lot of time wandering around out there, and just the field feels more accessible if you're in right field than at most other parks that I've been to. So that was what did it for me.
Yeah, I had to ask,
but it's something.
Well, you guys talked about sterile. When it first opened. Yeah, sure. when it first opened, it was sterile. We used to call it a mall. It looked like a mall. Sure. Oh, yeah, they opened up a shopping mall to play baseball in, but they've modified it over the years. So I was wondering, I have the same thing. I mean, that center field concourse area is really just –
Well, and you grew up in a city that had Wrigley. Like, the ivy is iconic, and that's something that we really managed to surprisingly do with the Coke bottle, but definitely do with the bay in the background out here.
Right.
But when you go to the cell, I mean, like, the cell's landlocked. There's not – you look out, and you sort of – the angle that it's at, you're not even looking out and seeing downtown Chicago. You're looking out, you're seeing the South Side.
Yeah.
And that's all right, I guess. But it has its things though, but it's tough because if you're coming into a city where that's the only ballpark, you're gonna find something. But to build something to try to compete with Wrigley, it was always gonna be kind of a losing endeavor, I think.
I think
so,
you're just always gonna be behind the eight ball there. You're just starting
you kinda did what you had to do, which is good, you know, and I mean, coming from Comiskey too, you did what you had to do, I think.
Well, and you know, it's funny because you see Candlestick and the Coliseum, and they're pretty much equals, except I think you'd give a thumbs up to the Coliseum because of the weather, right? It was always warmer and no fog and all that kind of stuff like that.
Oh, when it's a nice day at the Coliseum, it's freaking gorgeous.
Exactly. But now you got
AT&T Park. As long as you don't try to look for scenery.
And it's just like, you have Mount Davis.
It ruins it.
Mount Davis now blocking the Oakland Hills, which actually were kind of a pretty vista.
Oh, man, it was
before.
It was actually a decent view before, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but now that's there.
Not anymore.
Now Oakland, you know, their stadium is just, whew, man. But, you know, the worst stadium I've ever been to, and I haven't been to that many, maybe eight or nine or so, I got to see a game in the old Astrodome down in Houston back in, I don't know, 99 or so. And that was the most depressing place to watch baseball. I was actually kind of excited. You know, it was a new park. I was like, hey, checked it off the list, the cool thing. And first of all, the whole Houston area, I think, is very depressing. But then going into this concrete monolith, it was just stale, smelled like urine. It was just gray everywhere. And when something good happened, they shoot these indoor fireworks. I don't know what genius thought of this. Indoor fireworks, poop, 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 poop. So not only is it ringing really loud,
smoke just everywhere,
and then the smoke hangs for about three innings. It just dissipates and just is this general smog and haze within the dome. And then you get the cutouts.
Like, sit there hoping nobody hits a home run.
Yeah, the pale astroturf and just everything about it. I literally left in the eighth inning. I couldn't stay. I could not stay because it was claustrophobic, and it's silly because it's a huge dome. But it was that depressing of a place to watch baseball, and I feel very happy for the folks down in Houston that they blew that shithole up and built Minute Maid Park, which I've not been to, but my wife has, and she said it was a very, very nice park. So and I believe it. But man, I can't even imagine. You know, the 70s, 60s and 70s were the heyday of those multi-purpose / dome stadiums, you know. You got your Riverfront and Three Rivers and Astrodome and all those
veterans,
guys. And,
yep.
You know, they're – yeah, veterans. They're all gone now, thank God. So it's definitely a renaissance started off by HOK Architects, I think, is the name of the group that built Camden Yards in 1992.
Camden Yards.
And I've been there. I went there in 95 when it was only like 3 years old. So it was still new. And it was just – you know, they had AT&T Park had not been built yet. This is 1995. And I was like, this is what needs to go in San Francisco. You know, that was just a gem. I mean, I just loved being in that park. It was beautiful. Plus, Will Clark came in with the Rangers to play the Orioles. So that was kind of an extra treat to see him play that night. But yeah, so it's just really nice.
They're just using Will Clark to win your vote.
What's that?
They're just using Will Clark to win your vote.
Yeah, well, if he played at the Astrodome, I probably would have thought that was the greatest place too. So,
I mean, he hit one at the Astrodome.
Nolan Ryan,
really? I never heard that.
First at bat.
I'm totally screwed when we talk about Will Clark.
I know you're screwing with us.
It's a secret one from the archives. You know,
totally secret. No one knows about it. All right, let's move on.
You're such a hipster with your classic home runs, Chad. All right. We've run a little long. That was my fault.
Sorry.
We have.
Nope. Okay. That was a fun tangent, but I just like ballparks. It's true. Yeah.
Well, I do too. So. And because my favorite one growing up was Wrigley, and the one I hated the most was Wrigley.
Yep.
Because it was beautiful, totally, but it was legitimate. A dump. So I'm glad they're fixing that one. Sorry. All right. Go on.
No problem.
Oakland's new scoreboards, really nice. Okay, moving on.
It's bright.
Actually, I actually really like the new scoreboards. It doesn't really take anything away from the park.
Apparently.
Chris Bryant destroys all the scoreboards.
Yeah. He's
like, Chris Bryant and Giancarlo Stanton are not going to leave any scoreboards left in the National League by the time they're done.
No. I think that thing's going to be repaired every series after they leave town. All right. Let's move on to our new favorite guy. I'll start it off. Brandon Belt, because even though he had another two RBI tonight, but he has been hot lately. Seven home runs in 17 games, and he's one of the main reason the Giants offense has been clicking on all cylinders before this three-game losing streak. So he's my guy. What about you, Eric?
I mentioned him earlier. I'm going with Hunter Strickland. I threw the stats out. I mean, the guy's just been lights out since he's come up, and he's allowed one hit and seven and a third, eight Ks, no walks, no runs. So I, as much as everybody else, was very mad at Hunter Strickland back in October of last year. We kind of laughed it off because they won, but yep. I'm really glad to see that he bounced back. And like you brought up, Chad, he's working on a two seamer and apparently incorporating it better. So Hunter's really started to prove himself at the major league level. So he's my new favorite guy.
Good. Ben?
When in doubt, you just kind of go with the if Hunter Pence is the emotional center of the team, Buster Posey is sort of the logical center of the team. He's always got a clear head. He's always grounded and always kind of taking charge. He is our team Captain America. And I'm going to go with the guy who's got the eight home runs and who's second on the team in RBIs and who's out there catching, you know, four out of five nights every time the rotation comes up. So Buster Posey's my guy for this one around, and I don't usually pick the obvious choice, but I'm going to go with Buster this time. I do have an honorary mention,
right?
I do. I always have an honorary mention, but it's a guy that, as opposed to the guy who's been doing really well, the guy that we just like, and I think we touched on it earlier. I think Casey McGee is our new favorite guy. Took the high road, talked about how he took the job away from Bill Hall when he was coming up, and sort of told Duffy, look, it ain't your fault. You created a situation where you had to push them to make a decision, and that's what you had to do. That's what you were supposed to do. So
is he supposed to lay off to you know, cause
right?
He felt bad.
Like, you know, don't right? Like, oh hey, Rook, don't come in here and mess with my turf. They signed me to do that. Nope, nah. Yeah. McGee just says, you know, you forced the issue, and they had to go with what they had to do. And I'm not holding up my end of the bargain for them. So okay, good job. You're fine. And apparently, McGee had been good for Duffy like the entire time that he'd been in the dugout with him, was always providing some suggestions and advice and stuff. And they felt like they had a really good relationship. And just, you always hear about, like, we're bringing in this guy, he's a veteran, he's going to be able to talk to the other guys on the staff. But it's nice when you hear it from the players saying, yeah, that's what happened. So I like McGee. I'd like to see him back with the team. I don't want to see him starting until we've got a good feeling that he's kind of gotten going. But I do want to see him back with the team. I think that'd be nice. And we're certainly paying him enough money to get some use out of him.
I hope it... Look, I like the guy. He's Santa Cruz native, Giants fan growing up.
Yep.
I do want to see him do well, and there's a lot of, you know, fodder that he just put too much pressure on himself because he cares that much, and he likes this team, and he wanted to perform well for the Bay Area, and he knew he had big shoes to fill, you know, in Panda's slot, and maybe it was a mental thing, so maybe he gets his head straight down in AAA, maybe the spotlight's off of him, and he can relax a little bit. He had a three-run home run tonight for Sacramento, by the way, so, you know, maybe... maybe his performance will turn around here. So seems like a good guy.
Sounds promising.
All right. So we should hate this guy. Eric, why don't you lead this one off?
I touched on it earlier, and I put one of the tweets out there yesterday. But, you know, there was the word vitriol has been used like three times already. There was so much hate.
Because it is.
Yeah. There was so much hate spewed yesterday after that collapse in the ninth inning by the Giants. And I hate every single person that took the time out of their life to tweet bad things to Crawford and his wife yesterday, because they weren't just tagging Brandon and them. They were tagging Jay Lynn, right?
Yeah.
They were tagging her in them as well, and nobody needs that. I mean, I'm talking, you know, insulting the city of San Francisco, you know, jumping on the "you probably take it" and stuff like that, and calling them, you know, horrible names. And it's just, I hate every single person that did that. I wish every single person that did that got what was coming to them. And I don't wish bad upon people, but if you're going to wish bad upon people, well, then maybe you need to look in the mirror. If any of you are listening, you need to reevaluate your life if it's important to you to say horrible things to athletes on Twitter.
Yeah. It's fine to have a reaction. I mean, we were driving home from, and by the way, I haven't taken my family to a Giants game in years because my son's a little too young to enjoy the game and I can never watch the game. So it's a lot of money to go to the Coke bottle slide and leave early in the seventh inning. And it just doesn't seem worth it. But we had four tickets to go. And then of course my wife's sister scheduled her daughter's baptism for Sunday. And of course it's the whole like, oh, we got to go. And I'm like, but we got tickets kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, make me happy. All right, we'll go.
What happy wife, things? Happy right, life.
Happy wife, happy life. So fortunately I was able to sell the tickets. So at least financially we'll be able to reinvest in another game. But we were driving home from Concord and happened to listen to the ninth inning. And I turned on the radio. First pitch we heard was the home run by Freeman. I was like, whoop, oh, all right. Well, one out. All right, let's go. Then the walk happened, and that's where I started to curse under my breath. And my wife was like, it's just the walk. What's wrong with that? You know, and it's just like, you don't understand. What if that comes around and beats a tying run?
She's not totally wrong, and neither were you. That's a tough one.
That's right. And then it was to hear John Miller on the radio. There's a ground ball. This should be two. And he boots the ball. I mean, he literally had time to say, this should be two. And then he boots the ball. And yeah, I had a visceral reaction in the car. I did a little fist pump in the old rooftop. You know, the whole like, that was the end of the game. That was a game. My wife's like, calm down. They'll get out of it. I'm like, what if they don't? You know, that kind of thing. But it takes it to another right. level when people literally have to get on their Twitter machines and publicly say these horrible things about a professional athlete and his wife, for God's sakes. Like his wife is, first of all, it's bad enough to do it against the athlete, which it's just a physical error. It's a game, whatever. They're millionaires. You're pathetic if you get it to that extreme. But it's another level to then involve that player's wife like she had anything to do with dropping the ball, you know?
Right.
So I agree with you, Eric.
She literally texted him on his, you know, fancy new Apple Watch the instant that the ball came out.
With like, a little heartbeat. I love you.
Right.
Right.
It sent a digital touch. Yeah.
No, that's not.
Pretty bad.
It's just, it's really low.
So if you're one of those people, you're the scum of the earth out there. But everybody else, I love you.
The rest of you that chose not to do that are great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're, you know, actual people who live in a civilization.
The ones who thought about it, still okay. You didn't do it.
Exactly. And that's what separates us from the animals.
That's right. Think about things. Just don't act upon them.
Right.
Chad, who have you got? You got a little hate going on?
So, yeah, hey, Juan Uribe. I mean, obviously this guy was just traded from the Dodgers to the Braves. And apparently he broke down in the clubhouse and actually couldn't even talk to the media because – he was pretty devastated by it, but apparently he took out his frustrations on the Giants because he pretty much torched him this weekend. A couple of bombs, you know, lots of RBIs, a lot of extra base hits, and he kind of killed the Giants in the two losses. He wasn't necessarily game-winning RBIs, but if it wasn't for him, I don't think the Braves would have won both games, maybe one of them.
I agree.
So, you know, just because he's fresh out of the Dodger blue and an ex-Giant. I don't truly hate the guy, but still hate him for what he did over the series. And then honorary mention is A.J. Pierzynski because he's A.J. Pierzynski.
Boo!
He comes out and it's the boo birds come out.
I didn't even boo Uribe, and that was apparently a
thing.
Oh,
I would never boo.
That's
the funny thing.
He's not a Dodger anymore.
He's not a Dodger anymore. So
never,
ever. When he was getting booed, I was like, what are you?
He escaped.
What are you guys doing? Like, why are you booing this guy? This is ridiculous. But and then AJ comes up and he's booed, which I would heartily participate in. And then it's one of those things where, like, if you're going to kill the Giants, you know, hit a home run, but he hits this goddamn Texas leaguer in the right field.
He's
completely jammed on it, right? And it falls just beyond Panic's reach, which then, of course, loads the bases, and he ends up scoring the third run on the triple, and he's coming across home plate with the whole, like, yeah, you know, kind of expression and attitude. He's just one of those guys you just want to punch repeatedly in the face with a mallet.
Oh, I was going to say a baseball bat, but yeah, that works.
Some hard,
no, don't waste a good bat on that.
Again, I can think about it, just not act upon it.
Is it a crappy Easton? Exactly. Fine. You can use an Easton bat. Fine.
He's just one of those guys you can't help but actually literally hate. I have such revulsion for that individual. And to see him, even though he got jammed, he didn't put good wood on the bat, and he got lucky, he still succeeded. And it just kills me that he had a hand in the Giants' defeat
yesterday.
Sound
of gears grinding.
Yeah, so that kind of sucked. What about you, Ben?
I don't know, you guys. It's kind of tough to hate anybody after like an 8-game and then a 5-game win streak.
Yeah,
like
back.
I can't really. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe I'll hate on the overshift that everyone's using against Brandon Belt because now he's starting to go against it. He's finally starting to like scatter hits a little bit better. He's hit a couple of opposite field home runs. He's even bunted once last year, so help me. And they keep still dropping shifts, like over massive overshifts on him. And it's not like the Giants never use overshifts, although not very often. But just, yeah, I guess if we got hit on anything, I guess I'll just hit on that because it's being used against Brandon Belt pretty much consistently.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. It feels like he's finally starting to break the massive pull heavy habit that got that earned him that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. There's something about overshifts, like defensive shifts. I don't mind. There's something about overshifts that are just like, well, you don't know how to hit to the opposite field. So the hell with you.
Yeah.
You couldn't see him. You couldn't slap a hit if your life depended on it.
That's been killing me. I want to see him bunt down that line so bad.
He's done it once.
I just want to see him.
Yeah.
I
see him do it more.
Great. I'd like to see him do it again.
I mean, yeah. You know, they're going to give him that unless he does it every time, which he's not going to do. So I guess that's the point. But still, it would be nice. Like if sure, he's leading off an inning and you need a leadoff batter, why not? Do it.
Bummer. I mean, he's been going opposite field more often, too. It's just mm-hmm. he needs to do it often enough that teams go, oh, I guess we should probably put somebody on that side.
They got their
swing charts,
exactly, until it adjusts again.
People have been letting like 20 hits have rolled through that left side of the infield. Right where the third baseman would have been. We should probably do something about this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, eventually. All right. Well, on that low note, as always, traditionally, why are we going to win it, you guys? What thing is going to take the Giants from a terrible April, an outstanding May, and hopefully a very Pence-filled June, July, August, and September straight into the playoffs?
Play like May. That's it. Boom. Done. Seriously.
Like, you're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong at all.
I'm so specific.
Way to break that one down.
I know. Baseball is hard.
The high level analysis here.
Well, shit, if they go 21-9 every month, they're going to win it all.
Right?
Score more runs than their opposition.
But it's okay. The Nationals will still be the favorites.
No, I'll go next.
All righty.
I'll let you end on that note because you guys got good things going right now. Yeah. Apparently I don't know how to spell either. Strength up the middle. I really like what I've seen lately from Posey, Panic, Crawford, and even Pagan. Not so much Pagan with the bat, just Pagan running around the outfield. They seem to have anchors at every single position up the middle. And it's always felt like when they're strong in that core area, I've always been a firm believer if you're strong up the middle, then you're pretty well and strong. If you got a catcher that can throw it to a shortstop and a second baseman that can catch and turn it, if you have a center fielder who knows how to handle the outfield and handle the other outfielders, to me, that's the mark of a really good team. And the Giants have that straight up the middle from Posey, Panic, Crawford, and Pagan.
Right.
And occasionally Blanco, who also is no slouch in center field.
Oh, heck no. He's a better fielder than Pagan. But
I don't know. Not a better batter.
Right.
Agreed. I'm actually, just because it's timely – and it's where things are right now. I'm going to go ahead and say that the team clearly is going to win because they will use the Warriors for inspiration. Obviously, that's all it takes is having a basketball team succeed in your area. There are a lot of similarities with the exception of the Warriors didn't sneak into these playoffs. There's a lot of similarities between the we haven't won in forever and the we haven't won in forever, and Giants fans know how that goes. Just play nice and share your team with the A's because Warriors fans come from everywhere. They're the only team we've got out here. But, you know, that's going to be it. It's going to be on the back of a remarkable run by Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and the Warriors. The Giants are going to coast into the postseason. I don't even know how. Belt's going to hit 20 jacks. That's it. That's how. Definitely that.
I like it.
Maybe 25.
I hope he does. I picked 27, so I hope he does,
Pick 27? All right. Yeah. I'm going to go with 25 only because that's the first number that came into my head after 20.
Nice.
So 19. I'll take it.
He's gonna end up one short.
Smart ass.
No, I'm pretty jacked up about the Warriors. Obviously, been a fan for a very long time. Not as diehard as with the Giants, but, you know, first time in 40 years since they've won the finals when I was, 2 years old or so. So clearly don't remember those days. So this will... It's going to be pretty exciting. So, yeah, hopefully they pull it off. The Giants kind of look at that and say, hey, look, this is what we did last year. You know, let's do this again. Hopefully it'll fire them up and avoid this damn June swoon that we always seem to talk about every damn year.
It's not even like the weather is that bad in June. Not any worse than in May, anyway. No. So, not around here.
Man. I don't know it's about June. It is what it is. All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 87 of the TorchaCast. Willie couldn't be with us tonight, but he did cover the Giants game for the press box, so look for some information coming from him. In fact, he, two or three nights ago, he attended a Giants subreddit get-together, and he actually recorded an interview with one of the moderators of that site. So look for that soon. He's going to be posting that up as a bonusode in the next day or two. You can also follow Willie Dills at Willie Dills. You can follow us collectively at TorchaCast. You can also follow me at ChadK21. You can follow Ben at Fried Duck, and you can follow Eric at Two Out Hits. You can find all of our information and show notes and stories and all the other fun stuff at TorchaCast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like I just said, or like us on Facebook. In fact, we're getting pretty close to 1,000 likes, so go on over there and hit that thumbs up button. You guys have anything to pimp?
Not a thing.
Not a thing. if anyone's interested in Disney World, I think Eric's got some Disney stuff that he's going to be writing.
I do, but I don't want to pimp that.
Baseball
here,
blogs and Disney stuff.
A little different.
I've been doing some work with a geek blog lately.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of fun. Ace of Geek stuff.
My other major fandom besides sports and baseball. They're at aceofgeeks.net, the Ace of Geeks. I occasionally appear on their Geekly Roundup podcast, and I write their Geekly Roundup articles just about every weekend, usually staying up until like 3 in the morning to do it. So go and enjoy the fruits of my labor. But it's fun. We kind of take it with a little bit of a quote-unquote social justice warrior aspect. We are firm believers in equality and strongly anti-bullying and anti-misogyny and anti-just don't be a douche.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think the majority of our listeners can get behind. So, yeah, if you like geeky stuff and you like decent people and decent human beings and terrible senses of humor because I'm there writing, which means obviously it's going to be just real bad. Yeah. Check out the Ace of Geeks at aceofgeeks.net. That's my other big thing right now.
No, I've read some of your stuff, Ben. Actually, I think it's really, really good. I haven't had a chance to listen to the stuff.
No, that's because you didn't read close enough, but I appreciate it anyway.
Oh, man, that's pretty good. So, yeah, we're going to be covering, obviously, more games this year. I know Ben hasn't made it out to the yard yet, but...
I've made it out. Maybe? I haven't made it to the press box yet. It's going to happen. Yeah. I have made it to games. I just haven't made it to...
As a member of the press.
I haven't torture-casted my way into any games yet, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, this year they have given us clubhouse access, so we do have pre- and post-game access to those players. I don't think Willie's done much work with the players, but I've had a couple interviews, and hopefully we'll expand that for the rest of the year, try to grab some other interviews with some Giants personalities amongst the players. And other than that, let's hope the Giants can break this 3-game losing streak. We should be back next Monday, actually. It's an off day, so we won't be fretting about
it. It's not a June swoon when it's June 1st, people.
I know. I actually tweeted out earlier today, June, and I got a little bit of flack for that. It was a joke. Come on. It was June. That's all June.
It's not about how we're doing. It's about the general sense of dread you get.
I was like, no, stop that.
There's history behind
it. It's one
that
day. And I'm like, June. Say it again. So, yeah, hopefully we'll just laugh at this when they went 6-1 for the week or something like that. But anyway, hope you join us next Monday night. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher and all the various internet podcasting places. But for the absent Willie, for Ben, and for Eric, I'm Chad King, and signing off episode 87 of the TorchaCast. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchaCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchaCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchaCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.